Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
129 million dollars. That's the amount of unpublicized donations that went to the three conservative think tanks who served as the primary sources for more than 8,000 media stories just in the period from 1998 to 1999, dealing with issues such as climate change, environmental regulation, economic growth, and military spending. 8,014 is the number of news reports that use those think tanks as primary sources that were, where the primary sources were right-leaning think tanks. The number of reports in national media in that same year, that's 8,000 from right-leaning think tanks. The number of reports from liberal or left-leaning think tanks that were cited, 1,632. Interesting difference. An analysis of 7,000 guest appearances over an eight-year period on ABC's This Week, CBS's Face the Nation, and NBC's Meet the Press found that during George Bush's first term, Republicans and conservatives held a dramatic advantage, outnumbering Democrats and progressives by 58% to 42% as guests. In Clinton's second term, in fact, 61% of the ideologically identifiable journalists were conservative. In Bush's first term, that figure rose to 69%. In every year examined in the study, from 1997 to 2005, more panels tilted right. See, if it's Sunday, it's conservative, right? A greater number of Republicans, conservatives, than Democrats, progressives, than tilted left. In some years, there were two, three, even four times as many right-tilted panelists as left-tilted panelists. Congressional opponents of the Iraq War are largely absent from the Sunday shows, at least up until just very recently. And even then, they tend to be Republicans like Chuck Hagel. Tim Graham is with us. He's with the Media Research Center. MediaResearch.org, the website. He's the director of media analysis with the Media Research Center. And Brent Bozell, your head guy there, says Meredith Vieira's showing up on the Today Show as a co-host is going to poison Americans' mornings with her liberal bias, Tim. Really?
Well, did you see her interview Clinton this morning?
No, I didn't. I was,
my goodness.
I was on the air.
Who did the first
She was study, nice to him?
Who did the first study you were citing there with the think tanks? I haven't heard, I don't know if I've read that one yet. I've read the Media Matters one that you're citing about the Sunday shows. Who did the first one you were saying about the think tanks?
I don't have that. Let's see. Survey of U.S. media, major media. That was fair.
Okay, all right. It sounded like. Okay. Well, you know, I think that the whole point about these things is how do we measure media bias, as you introduced it? And I think that what I would say to you is that certainly this is one way you can do it. Let's take the Media Matters thing where they say we're going to count the party affiliations of the guests, and we're going to look at that, and we're going to say, well, look, if it, you know, like you said, their title of their report was, if it's Sunday, it's conservative. Now, what I would say to you is, when you only study the Bush administration, if you only study a period in which the Republicans are in the White House and the Republicans hold the majority in the House and the Senate, it's probably not surprising that a newsmaker show is going to be interviewing a few more people who are actually in power.
No, this study went from 96 to 2005. I mean, this okay. spanned the last 4 years of the Clinton administration, the first
okay.
4 years of the Bush administration.
Okay.
So it was both.
Okay.
And they
no,
point out
also,
that during the Clinton administration, it was 61% conservatives and 69% during the Bush administration. So and they say probably some of that has to do with the fact that the Republicans are in power, so therefore they would be more likely to be on.
Right.
But
let's
if it's Sunday, it's right. Your position, though, is that putting a liberal on the Today Show is somehow a horrible thing, that she's going to poison America. I don't get it.
Okay. What I'm saying to you is that first of all,
how is she poisoning America?
First of all, remember that in the conservatives were, or the Republicans were also in charge of the Congress in those last 4 years of Clinton. Here's the point with this, the way the MRC is doing it, as opposed to the way the left-wing groups you're citing is doing it, is we're actually watching the shows. those studies that you've cited don't seem to talk about what the actual content is. They don't ask what questions were asked. They don't talk about what the senator said, what Tim Russert said. It doesn't make any difference to them.
Tim Graham,
Quick, dirty, cheap, and easy study.
I watch the shows, too, and it's been a long time since I've heard a good discussion, for example, of labor issues and the fact that labor is being wiped out in the United States.
Okay.
There's no longer even labor coverage in our newspapers. You look at even the McLaughlin Group, which tries to be the unbiased show. And here's Tony Blankley on the right, and on the far right, Pat Buchanan, and then you got poor Eleanor there, the token liberal, and then they get some guy in the middle. I mean, that's back when Jeff Cohen was the producer for the Donahue Show for MSNBC, he was told explicitly, as a matter of policy on MSNBC, and you see this on the Chris Matthews Show all the time, if you have one liberal, you have to have two conservatives. And if you have a serious liberal like Michael Moore, you have to have three conservatives.
All right, well, let's get right to that issue then. What I would say to you is one of the things that goes wrong with studies like Media Matters is that they'll say, okay, you're going to have a round table. Russert's going to have a round table, and he's going to have Judy Woodruff, and Gwen Ifill, and Byron York from National Review, and let's say Eugene Robinson for the Washington Post. Now, Media Matters looks at that and says, that's one conservative and three nobodies. And what I'm saying to you is, if they come on the show and all the liberal journalists agree that Bush is a disaster, it doesn't matter. They're not going to categorize. It doesn't matter if Gwen Ifill comes on and says the Republicans are terrorists, but because Media Matters has defined them as neuters.
In fact, on issues from corporate power to trade to Social Security to Medicare, journalists are actually more conservative than the general public, a minority of journalists.
Oh, that's bunk. You've seen the study.
You know about this study.
Yeah, I try to follow all these goofy
liberals. But here, Tim Graham, let me get back to the original question. How is it that Meredith Vieira or any liberal being on the Today Show is poisoning America? What's wrong with both sides being heard?
Nothing. What I'm saying to you is, I think the issue with Meredith Vieira is you have someone who proudly went on the ABC's The View, as she was the host of that in 2004, and came on and showed everybody the pictures of her marching in a Bush-bashing, anti-Saddam liberation of Iraq type of protest right outside.
What's wrong with that?
This is America. It's taking a stand. Does NBC?
What? Somebody on a talk show is not supposed to take a stand? The View is not a news show.
Okay, what I'm saying to you is, if NBC gives a fig about the hiring somebody who has an image of fairness and balance, they didn't do
NBC clearly cares about the politics of their host. They fired.
She might as well wear a Peacenik T-shirt every day so everybody knows where she's coming from. And when she had Bill Clinton on this morning, and talked about, you don't have any intelligence about Osama bin Laden, but, do you have intelligence? I mean,
the guy was a Rhodes Scholar. How does that make her a liberal?
It makes her
George W. Bush was hiring people to take tests for him when he was in college. Bill Clinton got a Rhodes Scholarship.
It makes her a suck-up. My point to you is simply, all I'm saying to you is, let's all focus on the content. I'm saying to you is, if we're going to focus on whether Meredith Vieira's journalism has quality, whether it's fair, or whether it's balanced, we have to focus on actually the sentences that come out of her mouth. We can't just simply say, I touted up the R's and the D's. That has some use.
I think most of us are looking at the content, Tim Graham, and increasingly across America, people are saying, forget the studies. Let's just yours and mine. Accuracy and me. By the way, we're talking to Tim Graham. He's the director of media analysis, the Media Research Center, mediaresearch.org, the website. Setting aside your studies and Jeff Cohen's studies and all of it, you watch the Sunday shows, it's all conservatives all the time. You watch the evening news shows, it's all conservatives all the time. It is very rare that, and even the Democrats who get on are the corporate acceptable Democrats like Joe Biden. It's not the Russ Feingolds and the Dennis Kucinichs of the world. And I think America gets that.
Well, I think that people need to understand, if you want to say that Joe Biden's corporate acceptable, I mean, I tend to look at these a different way.
Yeah, he was out there in favor of the bankruptcy bill.
Okay, here's what I'm trying to say to you. If we're going to study who's liberal and who's conservative, some of us are going to sort of take the old-fashioned route and say, who does the Americans for Democratic Action consider to be their kind of senator, and who does the American Conservative Union decides their kind of senator. And if you're like Hillary Clinton and you get a 9% from the ACLU, you know, I mean, it's your problem if you want to say Joe Biden doesn't represent liberals or Hillary Clinton doesn't represent liberals. I mean, and to some extent, your fight then is really with the Democratic Party. It's not with the network Booker. I mean, you know, to some extent, I can
say... First of all, I'm not saying they don't represent liberals. I'm saying that they are the middle of the Democratic Party. The left that you're decrying is actually never represented. The real left is never represented.
I understand what you're saying. I would tell you that we just had Frank Rich on the Today Show. Frank Rich is all over National Public Radio. Does Frank Rich represent your point of view?
There's a start. Sure, yeah. Frank Rich is a good liberal. Tim Graham, mediaresearch.org, the website, the director of media analysis. Tim, thanks for being with us today.
Sure.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartmann Radio Program. Talk radio for the rest of us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
We live in the land of plenty, but many things aren't plenty anymore. Like the water from our sink, they say it's not safe to drink. You gotta go and buy it at the store. Now we're told there's a hole in the ozone. Look what's washing on the beach. And Lord, I believe from the heavens to the sea, we're bringing Mother Nature to her knees. Let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground. It's only as we follow, let's save some for tomorrow. Leaving and pass it on down.
22 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartmann here with you. Welcome back, listener-supported radio. Our program brought to you today by Sacred Grounds Coffee, saving the planet one cup at a time, 1-800-425-2532, sacredgroundscoffee.com. And Small Dog Electronics, get the latest iPod now, 1-800-511-MAX-SmallDog.com. And, of course, please, if you support the program, support your local sponsors as well. Call them up, tell them you're listening, say hi, and buy their products. That's how listener-supported radio works, with no monthly service fee. This discussion with Tim Graham of the Media Research Center highlights this fundamental difference between liberals and conservatives. And I would suggest to you that the Republicans in power right now have gone so far that they're not even conservatives any longer. That, for example, the debate that's going on right now in the United States Senate, where you've got Lindsey Graham, former JAG officer, that fancy way of saying he was a lawyer in the military. John McCain, who was a prisoner of war, whose father was, I think he was an admiral or something, a major, major officer, and McCain himself, a decorated war veteran in the Vietnam War, prisoner of war. John Warner, another veteran. And now several other Republicans coming out, Olympia Snow and others, saying, no, we're not going to change the war crimes provisions. We're not going to change U.S. law. See, the cons, you got Bill Frist yesterday saying, well, you guys don't have 60 votes, which is Frist's way of saying that he's willing to filibuster other Republicans in order to force a change in the law so that retroactively Bush's torturing people becomes legal, and his wiretapping Americans becomes legal, both of which are crimes right now. Bush has admitted that he broke the FISA law. He brags about it. The FISA law carries a 5-year penalty, 5 years in prison. Bush has admitted that he's waterboarded people. Alberto Gonzalez wrote the memo. Bush is defending it. This is defined by the Geneva Conventions as torture, to hold people underwater until they think they're drowning. That's torture. Among other things. I mean, you know, look at Abu Ghraib, endorsed by Don Rumsfeld. And the United States Supreme Court in the Rumsfeld versus Hamdan, or Hamdan versus Rumsfeld case, concluded that the United States, that the Bush administration has violated the Geneva Conventions. In the United States, because we passed a law called the War Crimes Act, if you violate the Geneva Conventions, you go to prison. So you've got George W. Bush has committed two different crimes that are identifiable, one identified by the United States Supreme Court, one identified by federal judge Anna Diggs Taylor, in both cases saying essentially that George W. Bush should be going to jail. What Lindsey Graham and John McCain, what these guys are all about is keeping Bush out of jail. Nothing more, nothing less. And that's got nothing to do with Republican or Democratic or conservative or liberal. That has to do with just a bizarre misuse of power. But there is a fundamental philosophical difference between conservatives and liberals, and I would say that that bizarre misuse of power is even something that more naturally flows out of the conservative worldview. Because the conservative worldview says, basically, we know we're right. Don't confuse us with evidence. And the liberal worldview, I mean, the liberal worldview came out of the Enlightenment. Out of John Locke and Jean-Jacques Rousseau and Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, the great writers of the Enlightenment from the 16 and 1700s, who said, we're going to examine sources of information. We're going to listen, we're going to learn, we're going to come up with opinions that are based on evidence. I mean, you know, Bill Clinton talked about this in this gig that he did in Seattle a few months ago that I emceed. It's Bill Clinton on this topic, just straight out.
Because there really is a huge sort of philosophical difference between the two parties, deeply held, that has policy and political implications and produces very different results for the American people. They honestly believe the source of America's greatness is in its big companies and wealthy elite. And we believe the source of America's greatness is in its middle class and the promise that everybody who works can be rewarded for it.
And that's a fundamental difference. By the way, right now, time for the Tom Hartman Program's Progressive Pop Quiz. Today's question is, Republicans are trying to change the war crimes laws to keep President Bush out of what? The sixth caller with the correct answer at 1-866-440-THOM, 1-866-440-8466, gets an autographed copy of my new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. The answer coming up after the break and on the Progressive Pop Quiz here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination, or at least clean elections. You know, we'd really settle for clean elections.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I ain't looking to compete with you, beat or cheat or mistreat you, simplify you, classify you, deny, defy, or crucify you. All I really want to do is maybe be friends with you.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. We have a winner in our progressive pop quiz. Once again, our question was, Republicans are trying to change the war crimes laws to keep President Bush out of what? And congratulations to Chuck Palmer in Eugene, Oregon. Chuck knew that the answer is jail. And thank you, Chuck, for your kind comment that you shared with Lauren that I'm an oxyacetylene torch in a sea of Bic lighters. that's a nice metaphor, I think. It's 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. The differences between conservatives and liberals, I want to get through some of this stuff, and certainly we'll have enough time to today as we go through the program, but also your calls as well. Nancy in Avon, Ohio. Hey, Nancy, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi, Tom. I just wanted to say something about how the press covers religious issues or moral issues. It's just a huge issue of mine when they have someone on like Pat Robertson or Jerry Falwell to represent the Christian point of view, and they never have moderates on when they're discussing things like choice or gay and lesbian relationships or stem cell research.
Well, I was going to say just the
Terry
fact.
Terry Schiavo, right to die case.
Yeah, just the fact that those are the issues that they define, that the mainstream media defines as the issues of morality of our day in a quote Christian context, speaking as a Christian myself, is very problematic because Jesus didn't talk about most of those things. What he talked about was the poor. You know, I mean, you go back, read Matthew 25, read the Sermon on the Mount, you know, Matthew 5 through 7. You go back and the stuff that Jesus was talking about, the stuff that Christianity has traditionally stood for of, you know, feeding the hungry and clothing the naked and providing homes for the homeless and visiting those in prison and healing the sick, that's the basis of religious morality, not just Christian, but Jewish and Muslim and Hindu and Buddhist and right across the board. And yet, the mainstream media get these cons on and they say, okay, let's talk about morality. And then they go off on these rants about gay sex and abortion as if that's the beginning and end of morality when abortion isn't the only place abortion is even mentioned in the Bible is when one of the prophets asks God to abort the fetuses of their enemy and God does it. And gay sex is virtually not mentioned in the Bible and is never mentioned by Jesus. So.
Well, and they never have a moderate. I mean, the United Church of Christ,
United Methodist Church, for that matter. The United Methodist Church, which Bill Clinton, which George W. Bush and Dick Cheney are both members of, has come out and publicly condemned the war in Iraq from the beginning. Right. And I doubt most Americans know that. Nancy, thank you so much for bringing it up and pointing it out. It's much appreciated. 1-866-440-8466. Greg in Danville, California. Hey, Greg, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you doing, Tom?
I'm great. What's up?
I finished a book last weekend on a round trip from Oakland to Chicago, and what I like best about your new book, Screwed, is that you're actually exposing the fallacy the Republican presidents have the average American in mind when it comes to taxes. And yeah. I just gave the book to a friend last night, and that's what she said this morning. But,
oh, that's great. Well, thanks. Go over to Amazon and write a good review of it. There's a bunch of right-wingers over there that have been... But in any case, forgive me. That was a little self-serving. But that's not what you called about, right?
No. I wanted to say that you called it a month ago. I was listening to your program, and you were talking about how Bush's approval ratings seem to mirror gas prices. And when you said that a month ago, I said, I want to see what happens. And sure enough, I'm watching MSNBC, and there's a big interview about how gas is at $1.69 a gallon and that it's going to be going lower as the elections come closer.
Yeah, $2.69, yeah.
And you called it, and I had to call in, and you're the best. Just keep fighting for us, and have a great day. Thanks a lot,
Greg, and thanks for the call. And in fact, USA Today finally got with the program. I've been saying this for 6 months that a good chunk of the October surprise. My two predictions for the October surprise are, number one, that they're going to pull Osama out of a hole, and number two, although frankly I'm. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if that didn't happen now that Musharraf has, you know, in Pakistan has essentially cut a deal with North and South Waziristan, which appears to be where Bin Laden is hanging out. But my other October surprise guess was that it would be that the price of gas would go down. And here it is, Susan Page, USA Today, today. When it comes to President Bush's approval rating, the number that measures his political health, one factor seems more powerful than any Oval Office address or legislative initiative. It's the price of a gallon of gas. Now, if you think Karl Rove has not known this for the last 4 years, then I got a bridge to sell you in Brooklyn. Susan Page goes on. For some, today's USA Today. For some Americans, analysts speculate gas prices provide a shorthand reading of the general state of the economy. A statistical analysis by Doug Henwood found that an uncanny 78% of the movement in Bush's ratings can be correlated with changes in gas prices. In a USA Today poll, 2 in 5 people said the administration has deliberately manipulated gas prices to decline before the fall elections. And guess what? Tom Cloza of the Oil Price Information Service, this is the oil industry talking to us, predicts gas prices will drop an additional 10 to 20 cents by Election Day. Yes, indeed, the gift of the oil industry to the oil multimillionaires Bush, Cheney, and Condoleezza Rice, who had the tanker named after her when she was on the board of directors of Chevron. Yeah. KJ in Camas, Washington. Hey, KJ, welcome to the program. What's up?
You know, all due respect to Hugo Chavez, I wouldn't call Bush the devil.
No,
I call him and his cabal. I would call them cancer.
That's probably a better metaphor. I think that demonizing your opponents generally just further polarizes things and doesn't work. But
anyway, you probably knew about this.
But Chavez, I mean, keep in mind, Chavez was giving that speech not for Americans. He was giving that speech for Venezuelans.
Yeah,
well.
Because that's who he has to answer to, and it played well in Venezuela.
Well, it plays well with me, too. Anyway, you probably knew about this, but it hasn't been mentioned on your show, and I don't know how many of your listeners know this, but Qatar, a Muslim Middle Eastern nation, is earmarked $100 million to assist with Katrina victims.
Mm-hmm. This was in part because of George Herbert Walker Bush and Bill Clinton getting out there and working on that. At least that's my understanding of it. The Qatar is one of the emirates that's very close to the United States and also very close to the Bush family.
Well, so there's some self-serving there.
Yeah, it may well be.
Interesting to know exactly who that money's going to.
Well, and you wonder if it's going to be like the $30,000 that Queen Barbara Bush gave. That was, or was it 300,000? Whatever it was, I think it was 30,000. That was specifically for Katrina victims. That specifically had to be used by the school system where the Katrina victims were in Texas. I think it was in Dallas, to buy software from her son Neil's company. Now that Neil is making a fortune on the No Child Left Behind Act. He's selling software to schools to do testing. And her gift, which is tax deductible, was earmarked that it could only be used to buy software from her son's company. I mean, it's just incredible. KJ, thanks for the call. Tom in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hey, three things quickly. First of all, thanks for the heads up on the Amazon assault by the cons on your book. So now everybody should go over there and who really read the book.
Yeah, that's my objection, frankly. I don't mind when conservatives trash my books when they've read them because, you know, sometimes it causes us all to think and sometimes they make a good point.
Right.
But when people go in and they just do gratuitous, buy this book kind of stuff, it's a shame because it just muddies up. And it's not just Amazon. I mean, it happens in Barnes & Noble, at Powell's.com,
across the board. But thanks for the heads up. That wasn't self-serving, so.
Okay.
Yeah, and to another thing quickly on the worldview difference, I think Clinton and everybody should just say the bottom line very succinctly, liberals believe in democracy, cons don't. That's what it is.
Yeah, no, it's very, very well said. And,
right.
And Tom, you're spot on. And in fact, here's Bill Clinton addressing that very issue at that gig that I am seeing.
That's what they believe they should do, to concentrate wealth and power. And because they believe that, they favor a government that is secretive, unaccountable, and constantly increasing executive authority, even if it requires the president to write, listen to this, 750 signing statements on federal legislation, basically saying, I know what Congress said, but that's not the way I read it.
In other words, they don't believe in democracy. They just say, hey, you know, we're going to do whatever we want, and we're even going to change the laws the way we want, and we just don't care. Bottom line. Matt in Sacramento, California. Hey, listening on KSAC. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Oh, I got to contest your awarding the guy for saying jail. Jail is for misdemeanors. Prison is for felonies.
Oh, you're right. It should
anyway,
be prison. Yes.
Let him keep the book. He had his heart in the right place.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the important thing is, and I wish the Democrats would listen to this and do it in their campaigns, is when Valero's chairman, CEO, said that they were going to milk this situation in the refining capacity and said it on TV. It was on Channel 4 in San Francisco.
How long ago was this?
It was on Channel 4 in San Francisco several months ago, and they had a convention of all the refiners.
And they just came right out and said that they were going to drop
the
gas prices and help Bush out?
Oh, yeah, I taped it. And it said,
amazing.
No, and he said this on camera. Now, I don't think he thought that it was being filmed and going to be on the evening news, the local news. And they even repeated it on the news in absolute disbelief. And the quote he had, I'm paraphrasing exactly what he said. He said, we, as the refiners, this is the largest, Valero. And he said, we can milk this situation and manipulate it to our advantage for years. And then he said it on camera. This was sent to Barbara Boxer and Feinstein. Both of them got
it. Incredible. Mark, if you can pull an MP3 of that out, you know, of a minute or two and email it to me, I'd love to see it. My email address is over on my website. That's amazing. That's amazing. But, you know, as I've been saying, if the price of gas is the thing that gets people to vote and people do vote their pocketbooks, you can bet Karl Rove's in the middle of it. Right there. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman program. We'll be right back.
The Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
In the good old USA, I'd just like to say, tomorrow's dreams are always coming true. And the whole blessed world, all the little boys and girls, are counting on the old red, white, and blue. We got faith in the Lord, we got Chevrolets and Ford, we got folks working hard to see us through.
And welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. The pill that will help you escape the matrix. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. It's amazing to think that things like today's revelation that Alfonso Jackson, the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, who went out and bragged that they were giving contracts to people based on how much money they gave to Bush and how strongly they supported Bush, and that they were canceling contracts of contractors who had criticized Bush, which is, by the way, against the law. And that triggered an inspection by the or an investigation by the HUD Inspector General, who found that, in fact, Mr. Jackson did do that, that HUD was doing that. Here's the quote. If all things are equal, you're giving out a contract, give it out to the family. Say what? Yeah. I mean, when you've got the Republican Party running like the mafia, you know you have a problem, right? But the weird thing is that this kind of fact, this kind of issue, this kind of reality is not going to swing the majority of American voters in November of 2006. What's going to swing the majority of American voters is the price of gasoline. Eric in East Windsor, Connecticut. Hey, Eric.
Yeah, Tom. First time, long time. I had heard recently on one of the news shows that one of the reasons gas prices are falling is because the oil companies did not shut down some of the refineries for their annual repairs and renovations, which we often hear in the springtime before they change over, and that usually pushes gas up initially. And it appears that, you know, it's, I guess, an easy way of getting the oil companies to plan it out the way that you want it to.
Yeah, this is not an accident. It's not a coincidence. And, well said, Eric. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Mark in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on WTKG. Hey, Mark.
Hi, how you doing? Tom, it was reported 3 weeks ago in the Wall Street Journal that we're importing gasoline from India.
Right.
And I have 3 points to make on that and a question. The Indian gas is flooding the market and driving the price down now because they talked about it then. And after the election, I think your October surprise will be over because much of the oil that India imports comes from Iran.
Oh, that's interesting. So we're getting gasoline from Iran via India at cheap prices right now.
Right, because Iran has to refine 40% of its own gasoline from outside of its own country because they haven't invested in refineries or a new oil production. And
so Iran is buying gasoline back from India as well?
Yes.
That's interesting, Mark. I caught the gist of that story, but I didn't drill down into it and get the depth of it. Thanks for the enlightening us
and
all.
Tom, the question I have is if we're getting oil from Iran via India, doesn't this put us at risk?
Yeah. This whole thing of global free trade is putting us at risk, Mark. I mean, the whole thing. We now can't build a missile without chips from China, the only country in the last 2 years, or probably in the last 10 years, that has actually threatened to hit us with nuclear weapons. I mean, that's how bizarre it's gotten. So, yeah, it absolutely puts us at risk. This is what Jimmy Carter back in 79, Jimmy Carter said, you know, we're no longer going to depend on foreign oil, period. The energy crisis is real. Well, in fact, here's Carter's
quote. The energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them. What I have to say to you now about energy is simple and vitally important. Point one, I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never.
And then Ronald Reagan came into office on the coattails of Big Oil's money, and Big Oil's been running the show ever since. In fact, one of Reagan's first official acts of office was to remove the solar collectors from the roof of the White House. Well, the ones that Carter put into place with this little speech here.
Moreover, I will soon submit legislation to Congress calling for the creation of this nation's first solar bank, which will help us achieve the crucial goal of 20% of our energy coming from solar power by the year 2000.
Which is more than all the oil that we're importing from Saudi Arabia. If only the Republicans had not shot down, taken apart, deconstructed, and destroyed Carter's program. Rance, driving through Illinois, presumably listening on Sirius. Rance?
Right, right.
Hey.
Speaking of Sirius, why is it that they have two conservative shows but only one liberal show?
You'd have to take that up with Sirius. But that's not what you called about.
In a speech, Bush said that he would do anything it takes to push his agenda, and that's sort of the mentality of the Republicans, that they are right, they're doing God's work, and the end justifies the means.
Yeah. Well, that was the point that Clinton was making, that these guys are ideologues rather than analyzing reality.
And I got a question for you. In a speech, I occasionally do listen to Bush. In a speech, Bush said that the Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda were evil because they killed 3,000 innocent men, women, and children.
Right.
Yet, in another speech, someone asked him how many innocent men, women, and children was killed in the invasion of Iraq, and Bush said, I don't know, at least 30,000.
Right, and he
so
kind
by
of shrugged
Bush's
his shoulders.
Own, excuse me?
And he kind of shrugged his shoulders when he said that. Yeah, so by his own definition, he's evil. Yeah, it's a spooky one, Rance, and thanks for the call. I mean, just trying to follow the logic of George W. Bush in and of itself will get you in trouble. Mark Crispin Miller wrote a brilliant book on that very topic called The Bush Dyslexicon, which has been out for, gee, I don't know, 5-6 years, but it's still a great read. 57 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, The True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, you have liberals, you have conservatives, and you have lawbreakers. Richard Nixon at least owned up to it and left office. A federal judge yesterday... This is from the Nashua, New Hampshire, town I used to live in, Nashua, New Hampshire Telegraph. A federal judge on Wednesday denied a former Republican congressional candidate's request for a restraining order. Now, get this. I mean, normally people get restraining orders for, you know, like spousal abuse. You know, he's beating me up, and so, you know, I need a restraining order to keep him away from the house, or people who've been threatened. A friend of mine who's a talk show host in this town, in Portland, was being threatened by this, was being stalked by some crazy guy, and so he got a restraining order. I mean, that kind of thing. That's what you get restraining orders for. But they can be, you know, much broader than that. And so this woman, Mary Maxwell, of Concord, New Hampshire, a Republican who had recently run for in the Republican primary for Congress, she tried to get a restraining order barring President Bush or Vice President Richard Cheney from bombing Iran or Syria. I kid you not. Her suit seeks a ruling that the administration lacks legal authority to preemptively attack either Iran or Syria without a congressional declaration of war, and that radioactive fallout from the use of nuclear weapons and any such attack would endanger people around the world, including herself. She argues that the Bush administration has claimed, now this is a Republican, has claimed broad executive war powers by declaring a, quote, war on terrorism, end quote, and that Congress has shown a disinclination to challenge that authority. or suit, cites media reports from various sources citing Pentagon plans for preemptive nuclear strikes on Iran and also reporting on the limited extent of congressional opposition to the Bush administration's war powers. Maxwell argues that the Constitution gives Congress the exclusive authority to declare war. She's right, by the way. I mean, it's right there in Article 1 of the Constitution. The sole authority to declare war is with the Congress. It's not with the president. He does not have the right to declare war. Thus, she argues, Congress must debate and approve or deny the administration's reported plans for preemptive nuclear strikes against hostile nations alleged to be developing nuclear or other weapons of mass destruction. When she was interviewed at her home on Wednesday, she said, it's so stunning for Congress to give away its prerogative, and it's not allowed to do that. My complaint as a citizen is that Congress only too willingly is saying, yeah, we don't care if he bothers to ask us. He can do what he likes. While the Bush administration has yet to respond to Maxwell's suit, U.S. District Judge Paul Barbareto on Wednesday denied her request for an emergency temporary restraining order barring the administration from attacking Iran or Syria. So, she didn't get it, but good try, Mary. Good try. Oh, my. I mean, it's really quite extraordinary when you consider it. Now, some of the differences, I just want to get, you know, through some of the differences between conservatives and liberals. Just you know, straightforward. Just stand up and look at it. And then we're going to have a report with Talk Radio News, and we'll be picking up your phone calls after that. Conservatives say that they oppose big government, right? This is their, yeah. What we liberals understand is that the conservatives actually are in favor of corporate control of the commons, ultimately of we the people. It's, you know, the conservative worldview is essentially an aristocratic worldview, not a democratic worldview. In fact, in the last 50 years, arguably the last 70 years, in fact, you could probably go all the way back to the Hoover administration in 29, but certainly since Roosevelt, the two times when the federal government was at its smallest size was during the Clinton administration and the Kennedy administration, relative to the administrations that preceded and followed it. Right? The cons say they're in favor of states' rights, unless it has to do with medical marijuana or physician-assisted suicide or abortion. Or flag burning, or gay sex, or the right of gays to marry, or, you know, and the list just goes on and on. Prayer in school, Ten Commandments in federal. I mean, it's incredible. The cons think that censoring ideas is just a fine thing. Liberals understand censorship is one of the greatest threats to democracy. Cons hallucinate a liberal media bias. Liberals and progressives understand that the media is owned by corporations. It's pro-business, of course. It's pro-establishment, which is thus pro-conservative. There's a great piece on this, by the way. T-Rex's Guide to Life, Politics Essays. Over at quinnell.us/politics/essays/liberal-conservatives.html. He writes, conservatives are likely to see conspiracies in government, foreign countries, the media, and parties that disagree with them. Liberals know that real conspiracies rarely work because people are usually not sufficiently competent to carry it out. Conservatives say that there's one set of values in America. Liberals understand that there's a variety of values across the United States. And that's the sign of a healthy country, that we can have those debates about what's important and what's not important. Conservatives think America should run around the world and shove democracy down the throat of other people with a barrel of a gun. Liberals think that we should spread democracy around the world by being a good example of it. You know, you go back to 1989, I think it was, when Tiananmen Square happened. Must have been. I was in Beijing. I lived there for a month in November of 86. And it was just, it was 2 years after that, 2.5 years after that. So it must have been 1989. 15,000 people marched, many of them to their death, certainly many of them to their imprisonment. To this day, carrying a 36-foot-tall papier-mâché statue, a replica, that they call the Goddess of Liberty, a replica of the statue, or the Goddess of Democracy, they called her, a replica of our, of Colombia, the statue that the French gave us to honor our goddess, Colombia. I mean, that was back when we were the example to the world, when people all around the world wanted to be like America. They said, yes, that's, those are the values we want, and we're going to take them. It's, you know, I've told this story before, it bears telling again, I think. It's back in 1981, right after the war. In 1980, during the war with Idi Amin, between Tanzania and Idi Amin, I was doing, I've been working for 25 years, 28 years with an international relief agency based in Germany, Kinder und Jugendhilfswerk Salem. And I went into Uganda during the war, and we took over the Namala prison farm up in the edge of the Karamoja region and turned it into a feeding station. I mean, it was 20,000 people starving to death there. And then I went back a year later to help raise some money for the program. It's still running, by the way. A very, very good program, saleminternational.org, if you want to see it. And Dick Gregory went with me, an old friend, and he'd been on our board. In fact, you know, playing his stuff on the radio got me fired from a radio gig back in 1969. That's a whole other story. Only time that's ever happened to me. But anyhow, Dick Gregory went with me, and it was his first trip to Africa. And we're flying across the Atlantic Ocean in the middle of the night and all jazzed up and three glasses of wine in us. And he says, you know what, I don't, and we're talking about the Vietnam War. And he says, you know what, I don't understand. I don't understand why America thinks it should run around the country trying to shove democracy down people's throats with a barrel of a gun. He says, when you've got something good, you don't have to force it on people. You got something good, they will steal it. And that's what liberals and progressives understand about American democracy. It's this great and extraordinary gift. And if we live it, if we actually are examples of it to the world, then we will see a continuation of what happened from the founding of this country, when basically we were the only democracy out there, the only representative, constitutionally limited republic out there. You know, up until the Civil War, there was maybe five or six others who said, okay, we'll try this experiment. And after the Civil War, and we survived, nations all over the world said, yeah, we can do that. And now, depending on how you determine democracy, there's somewhere between 80 and 100 of them out there. And the vast majority of them came about because they said, we want what they have. The people, from the bottom up. Those are the liberal values. 16 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Hey! And welcome back for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Tom Hartman here speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone in the People's Republic of Little Beirut, as George Herbert Walker Bush likes to call Portland, Oregon. Welcome back to our program, 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, our website if you want to drop in and say hi. Dick in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Dick, you disagree with my definition of liberals?
Well, no.
Say what?
The author you were reading from, you know, I just have to take exception with one of the items that he used to differ liberals from conservatives. I think you earlier said something, in fact, that the liberals don't believe in major criminal conspiracies affecting our governance. But, you know, perhaps that's true of a peer group conforming establishment liberals like Chip Berlay and David Corn. And maybe they believe that that's the case. But I don't think you'll find informed progressives chance of signing on to that. They're usually better informed.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dick. I think that that was a weak one. That was a weak one. But he's spot on and well said. Let's see here. Rami in Bakersfield, California. Hey, Rami.
How are you doing, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better.
Before I get to my comment about the UN and the IAEA report about Iran, I just want to mention the quick fact that people should never be afraid of their governments. It's their governments that should be afraid of their people. And Thailand,
to paraphrase Thomas Jefferson, yes.
Yes. Now, Tom, there was a recent...
Yeah, Thailand actually makes you think that constitutional monarchies might be a good idea.
Yeah, perhaps.
You know, I have friends in the UK who are very progressive, who argue strongly that a constitutional monarchy is a good thing, because if the government, you know, that if Germany had still been a constitutional monarchy, the Kaiser would have stopped Hitler, which is essentially what happened in Thailand. Although the guy wasn't a Hitler, he was really a Berlusconi. You know, he was a corrupt billionaire and ripping off the country, but. You know, on the other hand, I'm very wary of the idea of noblesse oblige, you know, of the nobility, the obligations of nobility.
Right.
But anyhow, that's not what you called about, Robert.
No, that's not what I called about. There was a recent report done by the IAEA concerning Iran's enrichment that they're saying that they're only enriching their uranium up to 3.6% of weapons grade. Now,
which is the level at which you have to enrich it to use in a nuclear power plant.
Correct. Now, the Intelligence Committee and Congress is now saying that no, they're not doing up to 3.6%. They're enriching it way beyond that. We've already seen this movie before where,
right.
You know, they try to contradict the UN and say all sorts of different kinds of stories just to, like, you know, drum up some support for a new conflict or... You know, it's the same replayed record over and over again, and I don't know where it's really going to end people...
Well, it's going to end with a war against Iran unless the Republicans get thrown out of office in 2006. I mean, that's Bush has all but said that, and many of the cons in his administration have all but said that. And for our listeners who are not familiar with what you're talking about, the Senate Intelligence Committee, is pushing... Or was it the House Committee? Is pushing this report saying that Iran, it's basically, you know, weapons of mass destruction. They're building bombs. Look out. And like you said, we've seen this movie before. And the IAEA is pretty indignant about this. The International Atomic Energy Agency, which is a part of the United Nations, saying, no, sorry, we're supervising their program, and they're playing by the rules.
Right.
So it's just incredible. Rami, thanks for raising the issue.
Sure.
Good to hear from you. Armin in Florida. Hey, Armin, what's up?
Let me tell you about Florida, Catherine Harris's district in Sarasota. That's all Republican.
Where you happen to live?
Well, one step away. I moved one step away, and I'm thinking about even getting further away. But anyway.
But you're still in her district, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
You
have my sympathy, Armin.
The guy that's running against her quickly is a multimillionaire, and he's got a big scandal brewing, and he kept his record sealed, had a judge keep him sealed for the primary, and he was
a Republican who was running against her.
Yeah,
but she won the primary, and so now she's going to have to go up against the Democrat who is what's his name?
Bill Nelson.
Bill Nelson, thank you.
No, yeah. But let me go back a bit. There's a Republican running for her seat that she used to have as a house.
Oh, her house seat, right.
And his name is Buchanan, and he's a very well-to-do businessman. He's worth $50 million. He lives on Longboat Key. His house is worth $7 million. And he's made all this money real quick. And it turns out that he ended up trading condominiums back and forth between real rich people, and then they inflated them and paid him off that way. But they kept those records sealed before the primary.
You mean he was running like a Ponzi scheme?
It looks like a real sophisticated Ponzi scheme that the rich perpetrate, yes. And
yeah.
the guy, anyway, but what I really want to get to is taxes and Republicans. Okay, it's crisis level in Florida right now. Taxes and insurance in Florida are absolutely going through the roof. I mean property taxes and...
Especially for the middle class.
Oh, my God. And you can't even buy affordable health insurance here anymore. They've handed the keys of the economy. The Republicans, the Bush crime family, has handed the keys to the to the insurance companies. But you know what they're doing now in Sarasota?
What's that? Real quick.
They voted to build a $50 million baseball stadium without a vote from the public for a team that only plays there. They only play there in the spring season. And they're
staying. Yeah, it's a repeat of Bush and the Texas Rangers, Armin, all over again. 27 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
It's all good. It's all right. Lord, it's always a good day when you're glad to be alive. Everything I need ain't too hard to find. Why don't waste my time complaining? Cause I don't see how I could. It's all good.
And welcome back. By the way, yesterday I was sharing with you some of the Bush-Hitler parallels, let's say, to just put it very crudely, and the rise of the Nazis and the current era, I think, is better, because I don't think that this is just George W. Bush, and certainly he's no Hitler, but just some of the freaky parallels. And I must have gotten, I don't know, 20, 30 emails from folks, a bunch of them anyway, saying, what was that from? It's a chapter in my book, What Would Jefferson Do?, called When Democracy Failed. It was also an article that I published on Common Dreams way back, you know, about 6 months after 9/11. Actually, the first draft of it was about 2 months after 9/11, drawing those parallels. And it's gone through a couple of iterations, and it's if you go to tomhartman.com and click on Articles on Democracy, you can find it there, but it's also in my book, What Would Jefferson Do? So that's what's up with that. And just, you know, wanted to mention it. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Bluesman in Woodland, Washington. Hey, Bluesman.
Well, you just sold another copy of that book, because I was wondering about that myself. Hey, I don't mean to take us back too far, Tom, but
that's
earlier you were discussing the price of gasoline around the country.
Yeah, and how, just for our listeners who might have just tuned in, how every time Bush's approval ratings start getting really, really bad, the oil companies drop the price of gas nationwide, and then
actually,
approval ratings bump back up.
Actually, I think it goes beyond his approval ratings this time. I think they're pushing for a win in November, and they realize that they've already lost the West Coast, you know. So the prices here have only dropped, about 15%, while the price of oil in general has dropped about 15%. But the price of gas elsewhere in the country, you know, like in the Midwest, has dropped like 30%.
Yeah. Yeah,
because they know they can make points with those people.
It'll be really interesting. And tragically, it'll be a post-mortem, but it'll be really interesting in November to go state by state and just see what the gas prices are and then see which are the battleground states. Because it is so obvious to me that this is just transparent manipulation.
Absolutely.
We'll see how it shakes out.
And if they play with the machines, we're going to have no choice but to take to the streets.
Yeah, it seems. Now, the problem is, what does that mean and how does that play out? And in fact, we'll be talking about that right after the next break, but in ways certainly that are not violent, that just speak. I think the Democrats should do what Lopez Obrador is doing in Mexico and create a shadow government if there's evidence of another election theft, and just say, okay, this is, you know, and create a government that's like not the government, but it's a government, and create their own cabinet and say, this is, you know, in public proclamations, this is what we would have done with this, and this is what we would have done with that, and all that sort of thing. Sean in Sacramento, California. Hey, Sean.
Hi, Tom. You know, one thing is, I listen to your show every day. Love the show.
Thank you.
And just wanted to say, or ask really, is that I do listen to the other side just to hear sort of the rantings and kind of stay abreast of the sort of propaganda they're throwing out.
Sure.
And the funny thing about it is that I consistently, when I hear you talk about Chavez, what I hear is that, you know, the what he's doing with the oil to build the infrastructure of Venezuela. And when I hear the right-wing pundits talk about him, all they do is sort of name call.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of curious, like, is there anything that really is, does he, you know, and you can answer this, I'll take the answer off on the air, but is there some, like, human rights violation that truly makes him a tyrant or a despot?
Not that I know of, you know, it's Sean, and yeah, I'll give it to you off the air with the dog there in the background. I have a lot of problems with Fidel Castro, for example. You know, the guy throws people in jail who disagree with him. I'm sorry. I will never salute Fidel Castro. And I'm not a communist. And Castro just comes right out and says, I'm a communist. And he is a dictator. He's done a couple of good things. He built a huge medical infrastructure, and they were prepared for hurricanes. I mean, you know, some things work well, but, you know, on the other hand, Hitler had the trains operating well, and so did Mussolini. That's not my only criteria. But Chavez was democratically elected, unlike Castro, and stood for re-election and was democratically re-elected by an even larger majority than he was initially elected. And I don't know of any, and my antenna is pretty good on this, of any really clear violations that have been alleged in international circles or in Venezuelan circles of human rights. And you can bet if he was doing the kind of things that Castro is doing, throwing his opponents in jail, or the kind of things that Bush is doing, throwing people in jail without the right to see a lawyer. U.S. citizens, Jose Padilla, throwing people, and we don't know how many have just absolutely vanished in the United States because the Bush administration says, well, there may be some, but it's a secret. Where people just vanish into the hole. I mean, it's like we are revisiting Venezuela and Chile, or not Venezuela, Chile. You know, Pinochet's Chile all over again, and we just don't know. And so, the kinds of human rights violations that Bush has perpetrated or that Castro has perpetrated, not to put them in the same category, they're very different categories. But nonetheless, no, I don't know of those being done by Chavez. Now, if somebody wants to set me straight, Give me a shout, and I'd love to hear it. Dixie in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Dixie, you learned something about the toll-free number?
Yeah, the toll-free number. I called my representative, Jim McDermott, mm-hmm. and his office said that the reason they quit the service was because it was supported by private corporations that didn't want to appear like it was biased towards one party or the other, so that's why they stopped it.
Oh, that's interesting. A lot of the toll-free numbers are you know, the various, the Sierra Club probably, you know, for their members kind of thing. I'll bet the NRA has. Actually, I'm an NRA member. I'll have to look. But a lot of these groups, they'll put in an 800 number that maps over to 202-225-3121, which is the non-toll-free number for Congress. And I frankly don't know where that number came from. I tried to find out for a long time. And
they wouldn't give me the name of the corporation, so
yeah. And it might be that they just got, you know, hey, tired of paying for it.
probably that was gone.
Okay, Dixie, thanks a lot for the call.
Bye.
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Joe in Anacortes. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Yes, Tom. First of all, let me say that I very much enjoy your show, but I want to change the topic and just throw something out for the listeners and for you to make comment on. I wonder if there is such a thing as a Bush listener, or whisperer, I should say.
Well, there apparently was during the first and second debates.
Yes,
John,
but I'm talking about his pronouncements, because the guy can string a sentence together,
mm-hmm.
and he may murder the language in the process.
Yeah.
But there are times when he just stops and listens, as though when he makes official pronouncements, as though listening to searching his thoughts.
Right, but really he's probably listening.
But then he comes listening. Up with something sometimes non sequitur, actually.
Yeah, well, they certainly the technology exists to put a.
It does.
You know,
somebody could be sitting someplace in a room watching him and prompting, because the devices are small enough, I'm sure, to put in his ear and prompting. So I just think it's strange than, you know, watching the guy talking, because he talks okay sometimes, and other times he just looks so discombobulated. So.
It's entirely possible, Joe. Two other possible explanations that I think, you know, have some validity, and thank you for the call and raising the topic. One is that as a reformed alcoholic who might have done some serious damage to his brain, and somebody who has a history of rages, out-of-control rages, Laura, according to Kitty Kelly in her book, which has not been rebutted or refuted by the Bush family, threatened to leave him because he was physically abusive towards her. When he was drinking, if he didn't quit drinking, and you know, he tried to pick a fist fight with his father, and you just know no shortage of stories of him as basically a mean drunk. Because of that history, he may be on medication, I mean, that's a possibility, that he's on an antidepressant or that he's on for his attention deficit disorder, that he's taking Ritalin, something like that. And that may account for the variability in his moods. You know, one day he's happy and chuckling, and the next day he's grim. Sometimes he's articulate, sometimes he's not. That's one possibility. The other one that Mark Crispin Miller lays out in his book, The Bush Dyslexicon, I find fascinating. And for Mark, this was Mark is a professor of communications at New York University, and this was a huge shock to him when he figured it out. He started out to write a book about how Bush mangles the language, and you know, isn't this cute? And you know, Bush's malapropisms, or what, however you say that word. And what he discovered was that whenever Bush tries to talk about compassion, about love, about caring, about the role of government as a positive force in society, he starts falling all over himself. He can't get the words out. But when Bush is talking about revenge, when he's talking about killing, when he's talking about murder, when he's talking about evil, when he's talking about those dark, negative, violent emotions, he becomes incredibly articulate to the point of eloquent. And you can see him shift back and forth in a single speech, sometimes in a single paragraph, between being relatively incoherent and having a difficult time putting his sentences together as he's talking about the obligation of government, for example, to care for the victims of Hurricane Katrina, and then suddenly become eloquent when he starts talking about killing terrorists. And Mark Crispin Miller consulted with, I mean, he's a professor of communications, he understands this, and he also consulted with some psychologists and whatnot, and who said, this is a guy who's very comfortable with the language of death and violence, who's very comfortable with death and violence itself. I mean, he used to brag about the fact that he executed more prisoners as the governor of Texas than any other governor in the history of the United States, in the 230-year history of the United States, ever had. This was a badge of honor for him, and the fact that he had never spent more than 20 minutes examining the final pleas. So, that's another explanation. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You may be an ambassador to England or France. You may like to gamble. You might like to dance. You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a long string of pearls. But you're going to have to serve somebody.
And why don't we serve democracy? In the United States and all around the world. Seems like a reasonable start. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 9.5 minutes before the hour. We're going to talk with Jim Oberg of WorldCan'tWait.org in just a second. First, we want to check out what's going on with the occupation of Iraq.
I want to know the men in the shadows of. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are. But they're never the ones to fight and to die. And there are lies.
Following our security incidents and other developments in Iraq, reported on Thursday as of 0630 GMT in Baghdad, a car bomb killed two people and wounded eight when it exploded in western Baghdad's mainly Shiite Hurriya district. In Baqaba, governor of Diyala province, Rad Rashid al-Tamimi, escaped an assassination attempt when a roadside bomb exploded near his motorcade in the religiously mixed city. In Dinawiya, a roadside bomb killed two Iraqi soldiers and wounded four. And in Baghdad, a U.S. soldier was shot dead by insurgents on Wednesday in northeast Baghdad. Speaking of which, Jim Oberg, Portland, Oregon, with us with WorldCan'tWait.org, the website. Jim, welcome to the program.
Welcome. Glad to be here. I tell you, it's good to talk to you again.
Thank you. The world can't wait.
That's right.
Drive out the Bush regime. You're saying WorldCan'tWait.org, your website, you had a full-page ad in USA Today yesterday. You've got a whole lot of people endorsing this thing, some very major names. And you're suggesting that on October 5th, people should take to the streets and do what?
Well, this is about the last thing in the world I'd ever want to do, but it come to this, in my opinion. You may recall I took part in that conference that you were a major part of here in Portland, the Summit to Save Our Elections last year.
Yeah.
And it became really clear to me that we are in a situation now where we literally can't vote these guys out. They've got control of these machines across the country. It appears that in the last election, if you read like Dr. Freeman's study of the exit polls, that maybe as many as 4.3 million votes were shifted from Kerry to Bush, and that Kerry probably won by about 2 or 3% in this country, if you believe the exit polls. Now, what did we do here? Well, we just accepted it. That was the same actual deviation that took place in the Ukraine, and see what they did. It appears to me that we've literally lost our democracy in this country. I was listening to Gore Vidal on Air America a while back, and he said that this means that the voice of the people may never be heard again in America if we let this stand.
Yeah, I interviewed him, in fact, two weeks ago.
Right. That's where I heard that. And what that means, in my opinion, is that we have an illegitimate and an unaccountable government in this country. I mean, we are in a situation that's about as un-American as you could ever get, in my opinion.
So before the invasion of Iraq, we took to the streets. And I was out there, I mean, along with lots of other people in the protests and the demonstrations. And there were more people on the streets of the United States than ever before in the history of this country. And we had some huge demonstrations during the Vietnam War. And there were more people in the streets of the world than ever in the history of the world. And yet Bush just kept right on going and started his war. How do we convert taking to the streets in October into political transformation in the United States? I mean, the Bush administration is not just going to say, okay, gee, I guess you guys don't like us, we're going to step down.
Yeah, you're sure right about that. Well, I think that what we have to recognize is that we don't have much of a choice. If you can't vote these guys out, if we can't use the system that was created to hold our government accountable, then we have to look to the fact that the only thing that's left for us is to vote with our feet. And that may mean that we have to go into the streets, and we may have to stay in the streets. We may have to leave our jobs, leave our school, kind of come to a position where we're actually willing to slow down our country, maybe even stop things for a while until we come to a realization that this has got to stop.
You're talking a peaceful action.
Of course, yes. There's no way you can go at this in a violent way, and certainly peaceful protest have been proven all over the world to be successful if we're determined to do it. I think the biggest problem in America is getting people to believe that it can happen. If you look at places like the Ukraine and what they did, if you look at what they're trying to do in Mexico, and if you look at what the immigrants did here to change that Sensenbrenner bill that was going to really make everybody criminals if you supported illegal immigrants here. We've got
people,
to believe
people
that
took
it
the,
can be done.
People took to the streets. Yeah, good point. I was doing a book signing in San Francisco last week, and somebody came up and said, I understand that you endorse World Can't Wait, that org. And I said, yeah, in fact, I spoke at one of their things in New York City the weekend before. And the person said, I've heard that they're a front group of the Communist Revolutionary Party or something like that. Is there something up here?
Well, some of the people who are associated with the Revolutionary Communist Party were very instrumental in starting it. You may be familiar with Not in Our Name,
yeah,
which was a group that was out to make the point that we in America do not support the kind of war policy that this government is out to do.
Right.
But the World Can't Wait is made up of people from every different sector. I mean, if you look at this signers that are on our call on worldcan'twait.org, you'll see that they come from every direction. We all have ideas of what we'd like to see happen on the other side of stopping what's going on, but that we'll have to figure out once we figure out how in the heck we can get enough of us mobilized to actually stop the direction we're going.
Interesting. Okay.
We're fed up with the spying, and we're fed up with the torture, and we're fed up with the illegal war that they say will never end.
Well said. Jim Oberg, he's with worldcan'twait.org, the website worldcan'twait.org. You can check it out. October 5th, the National Day of Action. Jim, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
57 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman radio program, The True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
We, the people, said Abraham Lincoln, are the rightful masters of both Congress and the courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who pervert the Constitution. Is it possible? Can it be done at the ballot box? Time for a look into the world of the voting machine.
Just a push of a button, just a touch of a screen. Welcome to the future, come try our voting machine.
Brad Friedman is with us. He's the editor and founder of Bradblog, bradblog.com, the website. And Brad, welcome.
Oh, Tom, how are you, my friend?
I'm just great, but I'll get better. I hope you're doing well, too, Brad.
I'm doing all right. Kind of busy these days for some odd reason.
I was going to say, you played a role in this virus hack report that came out of Princeton University with regard to Diebold. Tell us about this. By the way, Brad's, in addition to bradblog.com, velvetrevolution.us, another one of Brad's websites, tell us about this report.
Yeah, in fact, a source of mine, one that I've been reporting on for quite a while, came to me and said, hey, Brad, I've got a Diebold touchscreen machine. You think you can do anything with it? And I said, well, I think that we probably can. And so my organization, VelvetRevolution.us, set about finding someone to take a look at this machine. Eventually, we got it over to the folks at Princeton. And this was actually about 9 months ago, so it was quite top secret for quite a while. Just last week, the report came out, the first report, and there will be more to come on all of this, but that report from Princeton shows that in about 1 minute's time, if you have access to these voting machines, you can get on there and you can insert a vote-flipping virus that can steal an entire election undetectable. And, in fact, that virus can then pass itself from one machine to the next in order to steal an entire election. And now this has been, as you know, a sort of a theory for a while that people were concerned about this, and rightly so, because neither Diebold nor the states lets anybody actually look at these machines. So this was really a first-of-its-kind study to look at the machines, the software, the firmware, everything in one place over an extended period of time. And, in fact, we were able to confirm exactly that. Put a virus on, flip the votes. No one will ever know, and they put it on video so you can see that. And heck, even Fox News allowed the scientists to come on and demonstrate this this vote-flipping hack. Pretty terrifying.
Pretty strange.
Yeah.
Now, I recall the story out of New Mexico, and tell me if this is an urban legend or if this is real, because I've heard this from a number of sources. I've read it, but when the final story is told, you just don't know. That there were a number of precincts in New Mexico where they just didn't have enough voting machines, and people were lining up, and the lines were backing up an hour or so long. And so the people in the precincts said, well, we have a solution to this. We've got a bunch of absentee ballots here. We'll just have people, in line fill out absentee ballots. Some of them will get a voting machine. Some of them will get an absentee ballot. And this is like in the same school, in the same precinct, the same building, the same line. There was no possibility that it had to do with, that was from the neighborhood down the street where the rich folks live or the poor folks live or whatever. It was in the same precincts. And that when they counted the vote at the end of this is the 2004 election, when they counted the vote at the end of the day in the precincts that did this, that those people who voted on the absentee paper ballots overwhelmingly voted for John Kerry, and those people who voted on the electronic voting machines with no paper trail overwhelmingly voted for George W. Bush in the exact same school building.
Well, That, you know, I hadn't heard that particular story, but that sounds about right, because I know down in New Mexico in 2004 election, they had an extraordinary undervote rate in certain places, meaning votes that had no ballots that had no votes at all on the Sequoia touchscreen machines that they were using down there. In some places, as much as 35%, I think, was the average on Indian reservations and so forth.
Of the people who walked in and said, I want to vote, and walked into the booth and pulled the screen and then just didn't vote.
Didn't vote for any presidential candidate, and sometimes they didn't vote for anybody at all. And that led to Bill Richardson, the governor's down there, to his credit, that led to him signing a bill requiring paper ballots and doing away with those touchscreens down there. But it took a lawsuit. It took the folks at voteraction.org getting in there and threatening to actually look into those Sequoia machines and get a look at them on Discovery. And the result is, you know, any time, and this goes back to the Princeton study, any time anybody actually looks at these machines, we find out in no uncertain terms that they simply do not work. They're inaccurate. They break down, and you know, they're extremely vulnerable. The one of the other points the Princeton folks found is that this lock that they say is over the memory card that you can access and change everything in a minute's time is a standard key that you can buy at Office Max or Staples. It's actually a key that is used to open a mini bar in a hotel. Someone brought in their mini bar key and was able to open these machines.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, I had assumed that, like, you know, every time you buy a desk, every desk key was different. I didn't realize they were all the same key.
Oh, yeah, they're all standard. So, as a matter of fact, I know some folks from San Diego who tried to return their key down for after this special election down there between Busby Bilbray, and the election director told them, oh, just hang on to it. Well, it turns out that key will open every single Diebold touchscreen machine likely in the entire country. You know, and that also underscores, I know you and I had talked some months ago about that Busby Bilbray race and about those sleepovers that were happening with these voting machines when they were sending them home with poll workers for days and weeks at a time prior to the election. Once again, this underscores what I was trying to say back then. If you have a minute or two unsupervised access to the machines, it's game over.
Is there any evidence, Brad Friedman, bradblog.com, velvetrevolution.us, is there any evidence that this has actually happened anywhere?
You know what? I'll give you two answers. One, it's very hard to get that evidence, as we found down there in that San Diego case, because the folks just don't want to let you get at the audit logs and at the ballots and at the information to find out what happened, and they will do anything and everything to keep that from happening. Secondly,
didn't Bev Harris find something like this had happened in Volusia County?
There was certainly questions, or has been huge questions, in looking at those audit logs. You find incredible anomalies when you do get to look at it.
Right.
But, yeah, there is evidence of that, and my understanding is there is actually some evidence that will be coming out in the next week or two about a recent election in which they may have actually spotted fraud in the GEMS tabulator. So that is something else.
GEMS is the Diebold central tabulator system. It's the one that, by the way, that Howard Dean hacked live on national television 4 years ago on the Topic A with Tina Brown show.
Yep.
And the only politician to have ever hacked a Diebold voting machine live on national television when he guest hosted for Tina Brown. And shortly after that, CNBC said, well, that's enough of Tina Brown, and she was gone.
I will add to that as well, by the way. As I reported, a long time ago now at bradblog.com, the Department of Homeland Security actually warned about that particular vulnerability in the Diebold system prior to the 2004 election, but the media didn't see fit to report it, I suppose, and the Democrats.
Yeah.
Haven't bothered to get out there and make noise about it. And unfortunately, right now, it's all over today's Washington Post, for example. It is the Republicans now in Maryland, where they had their primary election melt down on them with these Diebold machines. Unfortunately, you know, it's the Republican governor out there who came out on today's Washington Post and said, we want paper ballots. Forget the machines. We want the paper ballots for the
Could that be because the Democrats and the progressives have figured out how to hack the machines?
Well, You know what?
I mean, isn't it weird? You come out and say, okay, we figured out how to hack the Diebold machines, and like the next day, the Republican governor of Maryland says, we don't want those machines anymore.
Well, I will tell you this. To his credit, he came out some months ago saying that he had no confidence. And I point this out because a lot of folks, try to suggest that these concerns about electronic voting machines are, a bunch of lefties who are whining about stolen elections. Well, in Maryland, that was one of Diebold's showcase states, as was Georgia. And in both cases, you had elections directors in each state who are Democrats, who are dyed-in-the-wool Diebold fans, and who have been standing by these machines. Now, the House of the Maryland House voted to get rid of those machines, the Democratic-based House. The Senate let it die. But it's a bipartisan effort out there with the governor saying.
Well, good on them. I think they flipped the vote in 2002 in Georgia the first year it was used because Saxby Chambliss we're out of time. Bradblog.com, velvetrevolution.us, 16 minutes past the hour. Thanks, Brad.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's not the job of a satire queen to help a particular candidate raise some green. But we've got to help Tony Trupiano come through. Won't you help make a red district blue? Now that McConnell's not a vampire, you know. With a record like that, the guy's gotta go. Iraq and phony ethics reform. That's got his own little desert dust storm. Tony talks from a heartfelt place. And that's why he's gonna win this race. Tony will fight hard for Michigan's 11th. So won't you be there for Tony on November 7th? So throw a few bucks Tony's way. Ask a few friends to listen to what he's got to say. Call Levin, Lexan, Granholm, Stabenow, and Dingle too. So won't you make a red district blue?
Indeed, make a red district blue. 22 minutes past the hour. Tony, number 4, Congress2006.com, Tony Trupiano's website, and Tony Trupiano himself, the only candidate I know of with his own theme music, on the air with us. Hey, Tony.
How are you, my friend? Jim Terror at BlueCanyonSatire.com must be going crazy right now.
Oh, man, he's brilliant. He is Blue Canyon Satire and BlueCanyonProductions.com. Jim is just one of the most creative guys out there. He did that for you?
Absolutely. That was a collaborative effort with our friend Carolyn Kay as well for Make Them Accountable.
That's marvelous. And Carolyn she is so good in what she's doing. Tony, number 4, Congress. 2006.com, the website. Tony Trupiano with us. And Tony, you're running in the 11th Congressional District of Michigan, a seat that is held right now by a toxic Republican, and there's a chance you may take it.
There's a very good chance I may take it. And I need to, not that I need to remind you, but and I know your audience is aware of this, but our Constitution is in crisis right now, and the more study that I do, not that I have much time for studying these days, but the more studying that I do, the more reading I do, the more reaching out I do, the more knocking on doors that I do, I'm convinced that America is beginning to wake up to a new reality, and I'm happy to tell you it's a positive reality, but everybody's got to do their job in the next 48 days to turn this red country blue.
And this is one more congressional district. This is normally we have our theme music for these segments where we talk to candidates is taking back. I'm taking my country back. But you got your own theme music. It's kind of cool. So the big issues for the 11th district in Michigan, Tony Trupiano. We're talking to Tony, an old friend, a talk radio colleague, and Tony four digit four. Number 4, Tony, number 4, Congress2006.com, the website. What are the big issues that you're seeing there?
Well, you know, obviously jobs in the economy here in Southeast Michigan, free trade agreements have absolutely devastated the manufacturing sector of Southeast Michigan, which is where my district lies in. Obviously, we still have the ongoing horror of the Iraq war, what that's doing not only to, you know, those that are serving, certainly within my district and around the country, but what that's done to our domestic economy. You know, it's tough as you go out and talk to people, and you've got to give them the bad news. The bad news is this Republican-controlled Congress did such heinous things as cut student financial aid by $12 billion, all at the same time giving the very profitable oil industry a $12 billion gift certificate. You know, when you start to wake people up to the reality of what this war is costing us, over $2 billion a week, what that means to the domestic agenda, what that means to ensuring all of Americans, what that means to just about anything that you and I could talk about. The truth is sometimes uncomfortable, as you know, my friend. And, you know, listen, I'm trying not to be the bearer of bad news everywhere I go.
Well, the fact of the matter is, Tony, all of this disastrous news that we're seeing, the death of the middle class, the assault on the environment, the assault on the commons, the assault on democracy itself, the assault on human and civil rights perpetrated by the Bush administration, the Republicans in the House of Representatives and the Republicans in the United States Senate, and at the state levels as well, by right-wingers all across this country, all of this presents an enormous and extraordinary opportunity for those of us who believe in democracy here in this Democratic Republic called the United States.
Well, absolutely. You know, I've got to tell you, at some level, and I just need to be honest. You know me to be nothing else. The progressive community, I still don't believe, gets it. I still think that they're in complaining mode and don't understand that in order to move this country, we have to elect candidates that reflect their point of view, that are passionate, that care, that have vision, that are willing to lead.
Get out there and get politically active. And if they're going to steal the election by 1 million votes, we need to turn out 2 million people. I mean, I just don't know any other way. Right now, we have to get out there. We're talking to Tony Tripiano. His website, Tony, digit for Congress, Tony number four, Congress, 2006.com. And Tony, I salute you. Running for political office is something that I don't have the courage to do. I just absolutely tip my hat to you and wish you the very best, and strongly recommend that all of our listeners get over to your website and toss some few bucks your way, and if they're in the Michigan's 11th district, that they volunteer to help out.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it as always.
Thank you, Tony, for being on the program. 27 and for running for Congress. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program, where reason is our lifestyle choice.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I feel like every train will come. I wish I knew the reason why. Why do I feel like running?
Well, it looks like, you know, my prediction that the reason, or observation, actually, noticing what's going on and pointing it out, that the reason why the Republicans are dithering in the United States Senate right now, why Bill Frist is threatening John McCain with the fact that he doesn't have enough votes to override a veto, or excuse me, a filibuster, is because what Bill Frist is trying to do is keep George Bush out of jail. And what John McCain is trying to do is the right thing for America, or maybe it's just fine with John McCain if George Bush goes to jail, because it clears the slate of all the corrupt Republicans, and then he can run for president as the white knight on the shining horse Republican in 2008, and the long national nightmare is over. So maybe it's just fine with McCain if Bush gets prosecuted. But here, this story in the Financial Times, which is the Wall Street Journal of the United Kingdom, Guy Dinmore, the headline, CIA refused to operate secret jails. See, the question, why is it that these terror suspects have been suddenly, you know, they're suddenly showing up in Guantanamo? Well, here's the article. The Bush administration had to empty its secret prisons and transfer terror suspects to the military-run detention center at Guantanamo this month, in part because CIA interrogators had refused to carry out further interrogations and run the secret facilities, according to former CIA officials and people close to the program. The former official said the CIA interrogator's refusal was a factor in forcing the Bush administration to act earlier than it might have wished. So the former CIA official said Mr. Bush's hand was forced because interrogators had refused to continue their work until the legal situation was clarified because they were concerned that they could be prosecuted for using illegal techniques. One intelligence source also said the CIA had refused to keep the secret prisons going. These guys, they're saying, well, you know, Bush may be willing to go to jail, although he's always gotten a get-out-of-jail card free, you know, and his daddy got him out of being investigated by the Securities and Exchange Commission for insider trading, or when his daddy prevented the military from going after him for going AWOL and then deserting and going on a year-long drunken binge in Alabama when he was supposed to be in the Air National Guard in Texas, or when he got busted for cocaine in Texas and his daddy got him into a 90-day, you know, local charity program. When he became governor of Texas and Alberto Gonzalez got him a brand-new driver's license and a whole brand-new number and all his old records purged. His drunk driving conviction up in Maine. I mean, you know, it just goes on and on and on. When Osama bin Laden's half-brother, bailed out his company, Harkin Oil, as it was about to go down in flames. George has always been pulled out of the fire just before just at the last minute. I'm sure he figured he's indestructible. But the guys at the CIA, they don't want to go to prison. Maybe George is indestructible, but they know that they're not. Amazing. Chad, is your last name Lupkes?
Lupkes.
In Seattle, Washington. Chad, you say you were quoted in the New York Times about Maria Cantwell inaccurately. What's the deal here?
Well, not exactly inaccurately, but I just kind of wanted to call and hold myself accountable.
Okay. First of all, we should just, you know, let our listeners know, particularly those not in Washington State, Maria Cantwell, one of the two senators in Washington, two good Democratic senators, Maria Cantwell.
And Patty Murray.
And she just won the primary with something like 92 or 94% of the vote.
Right.
And good on her. And she's, she's running. It's going to be a tight race, and we wish her the very best.
Yeah, we sure do.
So, anyhow, you were quoted in the New York Times about her.
I was quoted in the New York Times after about a 45-minute conversation with the reporter. And the quote reads that anybody who considers the war their top and only issue are fools. And it was an off-the-cuff statement, and of course reporters grab that as fast as they possibly can. But I wanted to clarify that anybody who really cares about health care, anybody who really cares about the economic populism that's being destroyed, the assault on the working class, like your book, anything like that, we can't have the war as our top issue. It's the tip of the iceberg, and we really need to have a better and bigger understanding of all the issues that we're dealing with.
Well, in many
ways,
that's
what I meant in my quote.
Yeah, okay. You're on the record. And in many ways, the war is emblematic of those things, in as much as, you know, the Bush administration ignored the will of the majority of the American people. They ignored the majority of the world opinion. They broke the law. And then in a series of ways, I mean, not just invading Iraq, but also in the occupation of Iraq, when L. Paul Bremer, George Bush's old Andover roommate, went in and rewrote the Iraqi constitution in violation of the Hague Conventions and turned it into a neocon paradise and all this stuff. I mean, this is the same kind of stuff that they're doing with our healthcare system. It's the same kind of stuff that they're doing with our courts. It's emblematic of everything.
You know, I agree completely. But the problem is, what's our goal to fix that? Our goal has to be to hold Bush accountable, and the only way that we're going to do that is by winning back the House, winning back the Senate, and getting the committees starting to work on impeachment proceedings or whatever John Conyers wants to do.
Yeah.
And the only way that we can do that is by voting for Democrats, making sure the Democrats take control. And if people vote for Aaron Dixon, which is the other part of my quote, they're not helping to make that happen. They're working against their own interests. They're working against their own goals.
Is who? He's the Republican?
Aaron Dixon is the Green.
Oh, he's the Green. I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, I respect the fact that he wants to run, and it's great, but we have a goal, and we've got to get the Senate in the hands of the Democratic Party. And if people vote for Aaron Dixon, they're not helping to make that happen.
Right.
And people who consider the war their only issue, and Maria Cantwell's vote in 2002 to be the only reason why they are voting against her, are not seeing the big picture, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Chad, and well said. I mean, any time that we risk the entire game by becoming single-party voters, frankly, to use the way the New York Times misquoted you, we are behaving foolishly.
Yep.
So, anyhow, thanks a lot for the clarification. Good to hear from you. Jeff in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, Tom. First of all, an interesting thing, you know, the Howard Dean film where he and Bev Harris are hacking the voting machine.
Yeah.
That's disappearing from all around the web.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Almost impossible to find anymore.
I wonder how and why.
Well, it could be part of it is the copyright issue, but it's just been disappearing all over the place. Votergate TV was hacked. Anyway, the main reason I called is about the lawsuit here in Colorado on the voting machines.
Uh-huh.
It's happening yesterday and today. And some interesting things have come out about the certification machines here. The guy who certified them was not trained in computers, not formally trained. And, you know,
the guy certifying them?
Yeah. Yeah. You can look in the website of Rocky Mountain News or Denver Post and find out about that. But, yeah, he had no formal computer training, and he overrode test results of his assistants, one of whom had a master's degree in information technology. And you see, if you look at the papers about these certification tests. The machines failed in all sorts of ways, the batteries, turning them on, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's been a big joke here. But what's bizarre is the state, you hear all these officials, and I will say lie. They say, well, you know, but the machines are going to have paper trail. If they fail, we can always use the paper trail. Well, that's just flat out a lie. Many of the machines have been around well before paper trails were required, and paper trails aren't required in Colorado until 2010. So the whole thing, they're acting, you know, like we have a paper trail. Well, many of the machines have been around for decades and don't have paper trails.
Yeah.
And it was bizarre recently. Arapahoe County Clerk here recently did a demonstration of the voting machines, and she couldn't turn one on at first. She goes, oh, this doesn't usually happen.
Amazing. And here, let me just share. Here's a piece of the clip that Jeff is talking about.
Go to the start menu, and I'm going to show you something tricky. And I want you to go to my computer and just click that. And you're going to see some go to local disk C. Go to GEMS, which is the name of the Diebold program.
This is Bev Harris with Howard
Dean. You're going to go to local DB, which stands for local database. That's where they keep the votes. And by the way, this has been out on the internet for ages now. Go to central tabulator votes, which is the database we just looked at. And then go to the sum of the candidates, which is that table. You see, we have 800 votes here for you and 400 for Lex Luthor. Let's just flip those. We'll make that 400, and we'll give 100 votes to Tiger. Let's just see what happened here. We'll go back into GEMS the legitimate way. You're the county supervisor. You're checking on the progress of your election. And as you can see now, Howard Dean only has 500 votes. Lex Luthor has 900, and Tiger Woods has 100 votes. Mm. We just edited the election. It took us 90 seconds.
That was Howard Dean. Here's how it felt about.
Dev sat me down, and in a few short seconds, I was amazed at what I could do.
Yeah, and he did it. So there you go, Jeff. Is this being resolved in Colorado more quickly, do you think?
Well, it's going to be very interesting. If the judge rules against the certification of machines, we've got a very short time here to print up paper ballots and use them instead.
Yeah, but printing presses can run fast.
Yeah, well, the one thing, again, that the people... the misinformation coming out from the officials is they'll say, well, it could take us 6 days to count these paper ballots. So, well, how come Germany and Canada do it in one night? They could,
yeah.
It's a
well,
lie.
Actually, you know, they also rely heavily on their exit polls for their reporting. But the fact of the matter is, if it takes 6 days, so what? People don't take office for several months.
Yeah, but the actual ballots do get counted in Canada in one night. Yeah, they had the results of the 2002, I believe it was, national parliamentary elections in just a few hours.
Yeah, although to give the devil his due, the population of Canada is less than the population of Germany, and it's
but it doesn't matter because it's in the scale. It's counted by precinct by precinct.
Yeah.
That at each precinct they only have a few hundred ballots to count. They don't count them in one batch of 100,000 ballots. They count them in batches of a few hundred ballots.
Interesting. I think we're going into a break here. It's apparently not. I'm sorry. continue.
But another key point is these voting machines that are failing all over the place. Yes, because again, they say like, okay, well, voting machines are faster. Well, Chicago took 2 weeks to get the results. Maryland, we still don't know. Busby, Bilbray, and you know, California is also problematic. But these problematic machines, guess what's happening? When places such as Chicago reject them, they show up at other places. Remember, Utah, they just move them around. Yeah.
How strange.
And then the other thing we need to not forget is we should pay a lot of attention to voting machines. They're a problem, but it's a central tabulator.
Yeah.
And then
there's also, you know, the whole issue of who's actually going to be allowed to vote, you know, the voter rolls. I mean, you know, we've got ChoicePoint out there, and you got these private corporations being brought in, and in Ohio knocking people off the list in Florida. Jeff, we got to wrap it up, but thanks for the call and for the heads up and the update on what's going on in Colorado. It's 46 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive and love is found.
And welcome back. 9 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Ellen Ratter with the Talk Radio News Service is going to be with us in just a second. First, our activism alert for the day. If you're not sure what to do,
may take all week, may take longer. They got the guns, but we got the numbers. Gonna win, yeah, we're taking over.
Predatory lenders are seriously harming the U.S. military, and one member of Congress is fighting to keep it that way. Representative Jeff Davis, Republican from Kentucky, trying to gut an amendment that would block predatory lending, would regulate it. One of his campaign aides admitted last week that he consulted with the legislation on CNG Financial of Mason, Ohio, one of his top campaign donors and owners of a national payday lender, Check and Go. So you can call his office at 202-225-3121. Ask for Jeff Davis and tell him what you think about it. Ellen Ratner, talkradionews.com on the line. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much. It looks like the Democrats are trying to really bring out whatever they possibly can to win this election. Now, this is the same time that we are hearing that the president is feeling very confident and is giving confidence to the Republicans that they're going to keep the House. So each side is kind of doing their thing here. However, the Democrats today in the House actually came up with a couple of interesting issues. First of all, the Democrats, congressional Democrats, released their Hispanic agenda today, and of course that's very important in terms of get out the votes, entrepreneurial energy, immigration reform, actually I had one of the union guys, by the way, tell me on immigration reform that one of their concerns is this whole issue of the spinach issue, as
right.
they call it, and they're saying, look, you know, if they didn't move all of Mexico to the United States, and they had these guys in the farms who are making millions of dollars, they probably wouldn't have this issue because they said, listen, there aren't even any toilets provided for the migrant workers in the farms.
Oh, my. So it's all about the factory farms now, not just treating the livestock badly, but treating the immigrant workers as well.
Exactly. And you can bet the unions are on that like, fly to fly paper. Also, it looks like Charlie Rangel today released a report, and he's talking about the donut hole, as they call them, Part D drug plan, and they're saying that this is a really big problem, that you have millions of people involved in this, and that, of course, an unless an enrollee has used $5,100 in covered drugs, essentially, it's the donut threshold goes between $2,250 and $5,100.
Yeah, a lot of people hitting that donut hole right now.
A lot. And so they're talking about that. Also, the Democrats came out with another report to talk about the middle-class American families suffering under the economy and that how expenses have really gone up, that there's actually been, even though this 275-month gain in terms of income has been offset by a $300 a month increase in housing costs, almost $400 in health insurance, $152 more in gas, child care, and other things such as college costs.
Right.
So you've got this situation where things are not, you know, yes, they can tout all the family income they want, but they haven't really been going up.
Yeah, it's not good for the American middle class. When, Ellen, are the Democrats going to start pointing out that what the Republicans in the Senate are arguing about right now is trying to prevent George W. Bush from going to jail for committing war crimes?
Well, I don't know, but you know, you and I might disagree about this, but I am a person who, as much as I am not approving of the Bush legislative or anything else that this guy does, think that it would be a terrible mistake if the Democrats went to try and impeach him. I think the backlash on that right now would be beyond anything.
Well, it's not possible right now. You mean if Democrats take control?
That's right, exactly.
But see, the fact of the matter is that the Supreme Court has ruled that he's violated the Geneva Conventions, which means he's in violation of the War Crimes Act in the United States, which means he can go to prison.
Well,
And Judge Anna Taylor Diggs Taylor ruled that he has violated the FISA Act, and that specifically says that federal officials who violate the act are subject to 5 years in prison. So you've got two different laws where he has admitted that he's broken the law, and these are the two that the Republicans are trying to patch up. Why don't the Democrats point out that the Republicans are trying to keep George out of jail? Forget about impeachment.
Yes, but you can't jail a president unless
you can after he gets out of office.
Well, but you first got to get after he gets out of office. That's right.
I think they're trying to immunize him in advance. You know, it's even if it's 2 years in advance.
I'm not sure they think that far ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Ellen Radner, TalkRadioNews.com. Thanks. Good talking with you. Coming up on the next Tom Hartman program tomorrow, Bernie Sanders, congressman from Vermont, the only independent in the United States Senate, will be here. Alex Epstein is going to tell us that the minimum wage should be abolished altogether. That should be an interesting one. And Michael Radner, Ellen's brother, is concerned about Bush's plan for detention and eavesdropping. He runs the Center for Constitutional Rights. That and more in your calls. Remember, my friends,
you've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The democracy begins with you. Tag your ip. We'll see you tomorrow.